making talk radio great again. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Welcome to The War Room. I'm your host, Owen Schroyer, and, well, the Democrats finally stuck their finger in the air and figured out which way the wind is blowing, and now Al Franken has been forced to resign. So it took the sixth accuser for the Democrats to feel this way, but it finally has happened. Al Franken delivered his speech today. Let's go to Al Franken resigning.
I felt that we had entered an important moment in the history of this country. We were finally beginning to listen to women about the ways in which men's actions affect them. The moment was long overdue.
That's right.
I was excited for that conversation and hopeful that it would result in real change.
Long overdue for you, Harvey.
Better for women all across the country and in every part of our society.
But then mainly Hollywood and politics and the Democrats.
Over the last few weeks, a number of women have come forward to talk about how they felt my actions had affected them. I was shocked. I was upset. But in responding to their claims, I also wanted to be respectful of that broader conversation.
So now he's basically saying, don't believe the women.
Heard, and their experiences
their claims
taken seriously.
I should
think
be
that
taken
was
seriously.
The right thing to do.
So he's not even really admitting. He's not even admitting guilt.
He gave some people the false impression that I was admitting to doing things that, in fact, I haven't done.
Ah, there it is.
Some of the allegations against me are
so. Why are you resigning?
True.
So why are you resigning?
I remember very differently.
So why are you resigning?
I said at the outset that the Ethics Committee was the right venue for these allegations to be heard and investigated and evaluated on their merits, that I was prepared to cooperate fully, and that I was confident in the outcome. You know, an important part of the conversation we've been having the last few months has been about how men abuse their power and privilege to hurt women.
Even though he just denied he did that.
I am proud that during my time in the Senate, I have used
so
my power
it's a problem
to be a champion
that I'm resigning
of
because of, but I'm not guilty of it. Okay, so there's Al Franken giving his resignation speech today, basically not admitting to any guilt, but is admitting that men have a problem basically abusing women and using their power, but then also says, I'm going to resign because of that, even though I'm innocent. Right, right. That makes sense. No, this is a political stunt, 110%, to spin it on Roy Moore to keep him out of the Senate, another Republican out of the Senate, get a Democrat in there to vote to impeach Trump. And then also, as Al eventually went on to say, attack President Trump. Oh, yeah, we still got a guy in the White House who admits to things on tape of what he did, but I'm forced to resign. Oh, what? So that was Al Franken saying he didn't do anything wrong, but he's resigning because of men doing things wrong. And then you know they're going to blame this on Trump and Roy Moore, and that is ultimately their goal, to keep them out of office. So that's Al Franken. Now, we're going to get more into that and the Time magazine choice of the Me Too movement as the person of the year with Millie Weaver on the other side. There is some other news, though, to mention before we go to break. There was a shooting at a New Mexico high school. We don't have too many details other than two reported dead students. You've got the fires in, well, really Los Angeles, but Southern California that are just devastating, historical, biblical proportions. And then you're really actually starting to see the signs of the fake Russian Mueller probe into Trump that it's now backfiring and coming back on the swamp. A former member of the, well, let's just say they caught someone inside dealing with the dirty dossier.
is the War Room.
And I'm your host, Owen Troyer, and we've got stacks of news to get to today. Al Franken has resigned. It's funny how that went. A couple women accuse him. A couple allegations start to pile up. And then all of a sudden, the sixth woman accuses him. Kirsten Gillibrand is the first one. She usually likes to keep kind of quiet, Gillibrand, or is it Gillibrand, up there in New York. She doesn't like people knowing about her existing in the swamp, but she opened her big mouth. And now Al Franken is being forced to resign. 22 other senators ended up piling on. We're going to get into that and the entire Time Person of the Year Me Too movement winning with Millie Weaver. Real quick, though, just to give you an idea of the waterfront, we've got fires in Los Angeles. I suspect that there's foul play here. We've got a shooting in a high school in New Mexico. Two students dead. It was reported that it was another student that shot them. We've got the media relentlessly attacking the Trumps over fake news. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is still delivering on the economy. More people getting hired, less people claiming to be jobless. We've got the absolute freak out of the peaceful Islamicist over Trump saying that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. We're going to have all that for you. Just all kinds of madness today that we will be covering. But Millie wanted to come in today because, and this is something that we've been talking about, but it seems to be bothering you even more now because of the Time Person of the Year story, how they're taking real abuse that exists, real assault that exists, and they're trying to commandeer that into a political movement that doesn't actually care about women. It's more about getting their political agenda pushed through.
That's right. It's about using them to try and, in the end, demonize the president. So if you notice in Al Franken's speech, he made mention of how this is about men attacking women and that the entire Me Too, hashtag Me Too movement was about men attacking women. But they failed to talk about the amount of men who actually came out as having been victims of sexual assault. So essentially, they're trying to make this into a thing where we should think and feel distastefully towards men and masculinity. When we just had the presidential election where we had a male candidate versus a female candidate, this is a way to psychologically attack President Trump in the end. And as we heard Al Franken saying, oh, all of this hashtag Me Too movement, we should help and be glad that these women are coming forward. But we know that he's not really actually happy about it. We know that he's not happy he got caught. That's for one thing. But the other thing is we had Democrats coming out saying that Trump now needs to come out and Trump now needs to resign. Well, the difference here is that Al Franken, he actually had photos and evidence. And to some degree, although he tried to deny it, he did have some admissions of guilt. Whereas President Trump, from the get-go, he had been denying these accusations. And there hasn't really been a shred of evidence to even come out with regards to those assault allegations. Now, what I covered here in this Time magazine report, which you guys can find up on Infowars.com right now, called Feminist Steal, hashtag Me Too. What I'm covering in this is the fact that they're trying to hide in this article the amount of males who were assaulted via the hashtag Me Too movement. They make no mention of Corey Feldman. Of course, they make no mention in the Time magazine article of the accusers of Al Franken. Well, he's a Democrat, so why would they do that? It doesn't support their political end goal. But they also seem to make the entire article about how women, minorities, immigrants, and LGBTQ members are predominantly being assaulted by men, heterosexual men in general. And they fail to talk about the statistics that are out there of men having been victims of sexual assault. What was interesting is that the Department of Defense actually released a study that showed that in their military barracks where they did their study, 10,800 military men were victims of sexual assault, whereas 8,000 military women were victims of sexual assault. But of the men who were sexually assaulted, only 13% actually came forward and reported those sexual assaults, whereas 39% of women came forward and reported sexual assault. So if you want to talk about hashtag Me Too and those who are actually more afraid of coming forward about having been sexually assaulted, let's talk about men, because they are more afraid of coming forward of being sexually assaulted. We also want to talk about how these feminist movements are trying to skew in women's minds what they should interpret as sexual assault. Nowadays, they're saying that if you're on a date with a guy and he moves in and tries to make a move to kiss you and you weren't wanting it at that exact moment, he read your cues wrong, well, then that means you're a victim of sexual assault, when that was never the case. That's always how it's been between the interactions of dating. Sometimes somebody makes moves. Sometimes women make moves on guys. You know, let's grow up. Let's not diminish from real sexual assault.
And I'm hearing you say this, and it's like, right, like, you know, the whole, it's about making everything abnormal. But what I'm thinking about while you're talking about this, because what you're saying is so accurate. In fact, South Park, if you're a fan of South Park, has become just absolutely genius lately. And the last episode where they're kind of, you know, making very accurate portrayals of what you're talking about, where it's like, should I open a door for a woman or not? Like, is that too chivalrous, or will she think that's offensive, or is she empowered so she's open it herself? And it's like this strange thing. But meanwhile, they're literally, I mean, you want to talk about the stuff that comes out of Hollywood in the movies. I mean, it's all sex, it's all violence, it's all, you know, so it's like, where, how do they sit here and pretend to have a moral high ground when they're like, they're, most of their product line is sex sells, drug sells, violence sells.
Exactly. And what we've seen here with Al Franken now coming out, where we have this this witch hunt now, which I'm glad to see Al Franken, you know, talking about stepping down. We'll see if he actually does go ahead and resign. Yeah, while denying guilt. We're seeing somebody who had pictures, who came out and made admissions, and who was pretty much caught red-handed. And there's a difference between the type of person that's a sexual predator and then the people who are being preyed on. But he's trying to say that it's basically a men's issue and a women's issue, where men are always sexually assaulting women, whereas you can have men sexually assaulting other men. You can have women even sexually assaulting men. And it boils down to the fact that men are less likely to report sexual assault than women are. So that's why you're seeing these skewed numbers, where women are predominantly the ones coming forward of victims of sexual assault. Well, they're more likely to come forward about that.
Well, and Time Magazine wants to just be a part of this removal of President Trump. And so that's why they add more fuel to this fire, because again, they eventually want this to come back on President Trump in the long term. In the short term, they want to try to keep Roy Moore out of office. And that's why you're seeing Roy Moore's campaign fight against lies that are being spread by his opposition, saying that your voting record will be public. People will know you voted for Roy, who is, you know, a sexual assaulter. But as you mentioned, you know, Fox is not perfect. I'm not sitting here lionizing Fox. There's a lot of things that Fox does that is probably shameful, but I have to give credit where credit's due. I mean, Tucker Carlson still covering the Vegas massacre. Fox News publishes this story. Corey Feldman's 1993 audio files naming alleged sexual predators found by Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office. They're actually publishing this. They're actually reporting on this. Time Magazine doesn't mention this in their story. Nope. Time Magazine doesn't mention the children that were literally rescued from cages last year.
They make no mention of Corey Feldman, who was kind of one of the first people in Hollywood coming out about abuses within Hollywood. They make no mention of the victims of Kevin Spacey, who were males. So in essence, the way that we know for sure, though, that this Time Magazine piece was essentially a hit piece on men in general and on our president, given that he was even a runner up for the Person of the Year for Time Magazine, is that they excluded Democrat Senator Al Franken from the story and his accusers. They made no mention of the women who came out against Bill Clinton for rape.
Oh.
Those were one of the first ones on the scene. We have Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey, and many others. They make no mention of anything that doesn't pertain to their political agenda, which is to try and pressure President Trump to resign when they have more false allegations come out against him.
Yeah, the whole thing is a political stunt. We're going to be right back with more. this entire Me Too movement is a political stunt. And what they're going to try to do here is they're going to try to demonize people or say you're intolerant or you're insensitive by not wanting to listen to women who have been sexually abused and sexually assaulted. When it's like, no, actually, we were raising these issues. We were raising awareness about this culture in Hollywood and inside the government for years, way before the hashtag MeToo movement ever came along. We've been calling that out. So you can't, that doesn't fall back on us. But the proof that this is a political stunt, not that we're being insensitive, but that this is actually a political stunt and that's truly what the case is the fact that you had Family Guy joking about Kevin Spacey having kids in his basement. Now he's being investigated. You've got jokes being made about Harvey Weinstein sexually assaulting women multiple times at award shows, what have you. Oh, it's all fun and games. You've got the roast of Matt Lauer, where all of Matt Lauer's strange sexual whatever deviancies is laughed at. And it's a raucous, hilarious, fun time to joke about Rat Lauer. But now all of a sudden that Trump gets in, now all of a sudden it's okay to throw all these people under the bus. Now all of a sudden it's okay to virtue signal and have a big issue about it. Now Franken has to resign. This is a 100% political stunt. This is not about women. They don't care about women who've been sexually assaulted. If they did, they would have reported on it against Bill Clinton. They would have been reporting on Al Franken and Matt Lauer and Harvey Weinstein years ago. To Laura Dunham's credit, even a blind squirrel finds a nut once in a while. Even she said Harvey Weinstein would eventually be out in public about what he's been doing. So,
you know,
it's all a political stunt.
What I think that the aim here, what they're trying to do, in my opinion, is that if you have enough legitimate cases of women being sexually assaulted or even men in general being sexually assaulted by public figures, you can set the social... the social stigma that if a woman comes out and accuses a man of sexual harassment, sexual assault, whatever, that if you don't believe her without any questions asked, well, then you're a misogynist and you're belittling right. women and you're putting women down, so that in the end, when they then have false allegations come out against Republican candidates that they want to get rid of, such as President Trump, that then that social setting will already have been set where you have to believe them, no questions asked. And that's what I feel like they're trying to do here.
This is why I've been saying it's like the French Revolution for so long now, because you just got accused and they chopped your head off. There was no jury. There was no court. There was no legal precedent. It was just you got accused and the environment was such that, oh, well, you're accused, so you're guilty. And that's what they're doing now.
It's like the Salem witch trials, where now you're going to have
even
men
the Salem
being
witch
accused.
Trials. I think they at least gave him a shot in court,
right?
I mean, at least the witches got a shot at it.
It wasn't a very fair trial though, because it was mostly all opinion based. But yes, it essentially you're going to see this hunt, this witch hunt on men and masculinity in general. And one of the things that really kind of has stood out to me is that these feminists are out there pushing this belief that masculinity and men are to blame for all of these sexual assaults and rape, where actually Psychology Today cites a forensic study that shows statistically the convicted rapists that were most likely to be, you know, the ones going out there and convicted and committing these rapes were disproportionately, meaning they were mostly what they called underprivileged men that were seen as not dateable, meaning the guys who were most likely to be out there committing the rapes were not the masculine men, not the ones that had a high status in society. They were the ones that were, you know, wanting to have their sexual gratification, but they couldn't get it. So essentially they're beta males. So beta males tend to be the ones most likely to go out there and commit rape and be convicted of rape, according to statistics. So the argument that masculinity is to blame for this rape culture out there, it just doesn't add up with statistics. It's just not true.
Well, and the general public needs to understand something before they get virtue signaled into this whole Me Too campaign for obvious reasons. I mean, I could talk about this all day. The reason why liberalism is so attractive to young people is because it seems obvious. It seems like the right thing to do. Like, oh my gosh, hashtag me too. These poor women, right? Of course, anybody would feel bad for a woman that gets raped or assaulted.
Of course, they any person, exactly. Man or woman.
And so they don't understand the underlying political agendas behind it. But this is the important thing that the public needs to understand is that the people who are using this hashtag me too campaign for their political agendas do not care about the scorched earth that they leave behind. So basically, they don't, as long as they force this down our throats and they hope that it can eventually remove Trump from office or keep Roy Moore out of office, that's all this is, the political agenda. They don't care that in the long run, they might so scorch earth society that literally men and women don't even know what to do anymore, where it's like, oh my gosh, Millie, I really like your top. Uh-oh, should I have said that? Was I being sexist? Did I just assault her?
Or even just saying a woman is beautiful now. Or like, opening the door for a nice woman earrings. Is an insult.
Yeah, so they don't care, though. They don't care what they're doing to culture. They don't care what they're doing to society. It's all about their political agenda. So the people just need to know, before you hop on this and go full bore and add fuel to the creation of this environment where you just accuse any man of anything, and then all of a sudden they're guilty. Just think about what that might be doing for the future, because I don't think it's good. And, you know, there's other stuff coming out about this, but I don't know if you saw this. Taylor Swift was on the cover, but because she's not an anti-Trump, vitriolic, hating America liberal, she's not allowed on the cover, now says the Washington Post. So that's nice.
Well, I found that kind of interesting. I was like, is that Taylor Swift? I mean, she looked like Taylor Swift, but almost looked like a body double. But where's her story? I mean, where's her story? I don't remember Taylor Swift.
She had the one radio guy come and grab her butt, and she called him out for it.
Yeah, but
notice the difference is that she actually did it when it happened. Not 20 years later, some guy grabs her butt, and she's like, hey, you perv, you just grabbed my butt.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how it works. Wow. And then he admits to it.
Exactly.
Not 40 years later.
Yeah. And well, the main thing I'm noticing here is that the women they have featured on the cover were women with very either mild cases of some type of sexual harassment. But most importantly, they left out women like Juanita Broderick, Kathleen Willey. They left out Leanne Tweeden. They left out a bunch of key players in the whole hashtag MeToo.
We're not trying to try to stomp these women down or say anything negative about it. The overall point is that the Me Too campaign is a political thing. It's a stunt, and it's all about getting Trump removed from office, having this fallback on Trump, keeping Roy Moore out. So we're not being insensitive to actual victims. We're just saying, think about the future and realize that this is actually a political stunt. Millie, thank you so much, and her report is on InfoWars.com. Ladies and gentlemen, this is all possible because of your support at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got specials running right now. 33% off DNA Force at InfoWarsStore.com. 50% off Vitamin Mineral Fusion, 50% off the entire line of Super Blue fluoride-free products. That's the toothpaste, that's the mouthwash. And then you've got 50% off our newest product, Alpha Power, the latest product at InfoWarsStore.com, Alpha Power. Try it now at an introductory price, 50% off. InfoWarsStore.com, that's how you make it all possible.
This is the return of the Republic. And this is the War Room with Owen Schroyer at InfoWars.com/show.
Dr. Shiva Ayyadurai is my guest. He is running against the fake Indian Pocahontas, Elizabeth Warren, and there's a couple things I actually want to get Shiva on. On a serious note, I want to talk to Shiva about net neutrality. I mean, he is the inventor of email, so why would I want to talk to him about net neutrality? But Shiva, I want to have some fun because you like to have a good time too. But you got a brilliant marketing campaign right now. And, you know, you're highly skilled, you're highly intelligent, you're an inventor, scientist, and your latest invention that you have come out with now is the Real Indian DNA Test Kit. Know the unique you, declare your independence, and you are willing, with the trending hashtag, take the test, to actually deliver one of these to Elizabeth Warren so she can actually know her true Indian heritage. Dr. Shiva, this is truly a noble cause you are taking up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you know, about in June of her birthday, I sent her a 23andMe kit, and she didn't accept that. Maybe she didn't like the brand, and she returned it. So I thought it might be good to make something specific for her. So we're actually manufacturing these, Owen. So it's called the Real Indian Test Kit. We also have a variation of it called the Real You, for those people who think maybe we're playing identity politics. So there's a different version of it called the Real You, which is really take the test. And as you notice, there's a quote on there, which is a testimonial from me. It says, I always knew that I was a real American. Now I also know that I'm a real Indian in more ways than one. Because as you know, I not only have South Indian blood in me, but also Native American. So it says, take the test to get to know the real you. So as a part of that, Owen, we're actually running a DNA dance party in Cambridge across from Harvard Law School, where, as you know, Warren works. And it's going to be about 80 people, 100 people can come. People are signing up like crazy. So there's a few seats left, $25 to get in, $100. And you actually will get your own DNA testing done there. I've told Senator Warren on Twitter, I'll send her an Uber pool if she wants, or an Uber X or Uber VIP. She lives down the street.
Yeah.
To come by. So I hope she takes us up on it, because it's really easy, right? We can solve all of this quite easily.
Well, I mean, you know, Native American people are, you know, they're known for their nobility, and clearly here you are, still a very noble person, to not only reach out to Elizabeth Warren and say, hey, you know, you claim to be an Indian. Let's find out. Here's the test for you. Now you're inviting her to your parties. I mean,
we just want to move beyond this. Look, when she loses in November, I think it's really important she and I start a good friendship now. Because, you know, it's important to transition properly for the people of Massachusetts. So why not come to the party? Why not take the test? Let's move beyond this, because there's a lot of issues that got to get solved in Massachusetts. As we know, Massachusetts was rated as one of the most corrupt states in America, has the 47th worst infrastructure, horrible infrastructure, 3 times the national average in opioid addiction, and all brought to you by Elizabeth Warren from Harvard, Mitt Romney from Harvard, Charlie Baker, who's a never Trumper, Rhino from Harvard. And what has any of these Harvard guys delivered? What they've delivered for themselves is a $45 billion hedge fund called Harvard University, which runs as a fake university. Interestingly enough, you know, MIT has its problems too, but interestingly enough, down the street at MIT, 33,000 businesses came out of MIT, the nerds who actually work for a living, $2 trillion in revenue per year to the national GDP. Oh, and so that's really what America's about. It's supposed to be about people actually create, innovate, are independent with integrity, integrate ideas and bring things. That's what makes America great. The Harvard lawyer lobbyists are very different than Shivaya Duray, the inventor scientist. And that's why I think our campaign is doing so well, particularly as we have raised up the slogan, declare your independence, which means independence from these parties, which means independence in taking care of our health, independence in innovation. And that's what the whole campaign is about. And it's doing really, really well. And we're all having a lot of fun with it, because you have to have fun with this, because it's otherwise it gets very, very cumbersome and onerous when you realize the enemy that you're facing. So we're having a grand old time, as you started out this discussion on. You know, one thing I want to let you know is we actually, you know, notice there's my Christmas tree back there. We got Elizabeth Warren, and I actually, for her and Monsanto, have registered a star, which they'll get for Christmas. It's called the Monsanto Warren. So it's been registered. And just to let you
So you're telling me now that Elizabeth Warren actually owns the Death Star?
Yeah, it's called the Monsanto Warren Death Star. I think you're putting it up there. And interesting enough, we will be hosting a showing of this. It's right in the constellation, if you can see it here, of Cancer, which is appropriate. So there is a star now named after Elizabeth Warren. And the reason we're doing this is she is in collusion with probably the most evil company on the planet. And as a hypocrite, is out there saying we should tax people, yet she's at Harvard, which is basically Wall Street. She's talking about the fact that she cares about people's health care, which she thinks is Romney care and Obamacare. But the reality is that she's been in collusion with Monsanto. And everyone listening should know this. Monsanto has single-handedly destroyed the public food supply in this country. Glyphosate Roundup, you guys have talked about a lot on your show, came out of Agent Orange. You know, where today is Pearl Harbor. a day which is a very important day in American history. You know, 50,000 tons of Agent Orange were dropped on our veterans when they went to Vietnam. They still suffer. And Monsanto is a company that single-handedly moved that technology to create Roundup or glyphosate, which is pretty much in the entire food supply. That's why it's important to eat organic food. It's important that we eat foods that have no GMOs. But that's why we're saying right here, we should all, when we look up in the night sky, we want to remind people that Elizabeth Warren and Monsanto are in collusion. And this is another part of the hypocrisy of the liberal wing of the establishment. They claim they want to help us. They claim that they're for healthcare, but the reality is they have destroyed the public food supply. Interestingly enough, Owen, there's been a very bunch of disclosures that have come out with CFPB, right? The Financial Bureau. And if you work that, you find out that the ad agency, which actually supported CFPB to put out their advertising how great CFPB is the same ad agency. In fact, the same account manager, I found out, and their creative people also work for the Gates Foundation and Facebook. So all of this is a very incestuous pile of snakes who all work together to promote to people of color, to poor whites, to poor blacks, that they're fighting for their interests when what they're really fighting for is centralization of power. And I know, and if you want, we can talk about net neutrality, because that's what net neutrality is really about. It's about centralizing power and actually increasing costs of bandwidth to end users.
Well, I want to talk about net neutrality, but let's do that on the other side, because we've got just a minute left in this segment. This is why Elizabeth Warren is so afraid of you. And I think this is why the entire establishment of Massachusetts is afraid of you, because much like Trump, you're a get in and just blow up the establishment, blow up the status quo type of guy, doing things like putting the real Indian DNA test kit. You just purchased a star for Elizabeth Warren, the Monsanto Death Star. Nobody has that kind of creativity. And Shiva, my crew is just letting me know here. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Dean Tran won a state senator race in Worcester County, Massachusetts, first Republican since 91. Now, I know that you've decided to run as an independent, but do you take this as a good sign for your campaign that it looks like the deep blue roots in Massachusetts might be willing to vote differently?
Well, here's the deal. So the important thing is, I think, Owen, is that people in Massachusetts, by the way, Massachusetts has nearly 5 million independents, 1.5 million Democrats, about 492,000 Republicans. This was relatively a small race. Interesting enough, this was supported by one of the Never Trumper Republicans who's running. So the dynamics of this are unclear what he actually stands for. But I think what's more pertinent is the fact that you had a flipping take place from Democrat to Republican, which in my view basically says that everyday people are tired of the ownership of one party for that in this case.
All right, it's Dr. Shiva Iyedi Ray. We got to go to a break here. VAShiva.com, ShivaForSenate.com. You don't want to miss all of the creative things he's doing on his campaign. Dr. Shiva Iyedi Ray is a very busy man. He's running for Senate against Elizabeth Warren, one of the leading swamp creatures out there. But in the meantime of running his campaign, he's hosting dances. He's inventing new DNA test kits for real Indians. He's even tracking stars. He's even going astrological on us, and he's purchased a star for Elizabeth Warren and named it the Monsanto Death Star. So he's even giving gifts. He's given multiple gifts now to Elizabeth Warren, who he's running against. Such a noble person, Dr. Shiva Iyedi Ray. But he is also the inventor of email, and one of the big topics is net neutrality. I know that you've got some opinions on this. I was told that you recently updated your website as well to talk about net neutrality. I think that Ajit Pai is at least saying and seems to be doing the right things, but what is your take as the inventor of email on net neutrality, Dr. Shiva Iyedi Ray?
Yeah, so Owen, so first of all, what is net neutrality and what is promoted out there, and what's the reality of it? So what's been promoted to the public is what we want to do, or what they want the government to do is to create an environment where the consumer can access content in an equal basis. So what that means is, so think about it this way. You have the providers of content, people who create lots of content, right? Like Netflix or YouTube or Google, Facebook, these guys are, or InfoWars, right? You create content. And then there's the consumers of content, which are everyday people watching the show, et cetera. What has occurred over the last probably 30, 40 years is in between the providers of content and in between the consumers of content have come about pipes or people who control that content. Now, in the early days of the internet, they were very, very local, small ISPs, internet service providers. But over time, through all sorts of collusion and corruption, you started having the creation of major ISPs, centralization of telecommunications like the Verizons, the AT&Ts, et cetera. All right. So those are the middlemen that own the pipes between the content creators like yourself or me to the consumer. So that's sort of the landscape. I hope that's clear. What net neutrality said was, okay, we want to make sure that I as a consumer can access content freely. So let's say there's InfoWars out there and then there's CNN, that the ISPs who probably don't want certain types of content, they may have their own preferential ideas, don't stop, let's say, InfoWars content from reaching me and make it easier for me to get content from CNN, right? So this was a notion of blocking and throttling, which meant that I, as the ISP, for some reason, I said, you know what? I don't like certain types of content. I'm going to slow down the content that Shiva will receive from InfoWars, but I'm going to make it really fast, put a CNN on a superhighway. All right. So net neutrality, the good, quote unquote, good idea was that we were going to make the internet neutral, net neutral. All right. But what you really see what's happened is that in February 2015, a Title II got added or reinforced into the Communications Act, which basically said the big telcos have to be with common carriers. Now, what does that really mean? What that means is, so if I'm Google or YouTube, and I have to purchase, by the way, I as an information provider have to purchase pipe bandwidth, upload pipes to reach my audience. So they're probably paying X dollars per bandwidth. Google, I don't know what the number is, probably paying tens of millions of dollars per month. A small provider is probably not paying as much to reach me. So net neutrality also gets into, which hasn't been fully implemented, and this is where it gets dangerous, is that Google and that small provider will pay around the same. Okay, it all sounds good. This is why Google and Facebook want net neutrality, because it's going to lower the cost for them. Well, if you lower the cost for them, the ISPs have got to make the revenue somewhere else. Where are they going to make it? They're going to make it from the end consumer. So if you talk to a lot of people between 2007 to 2015, people were paying maybe 10, 15, 20 bucks a month. Many of those people's fees are already starting to go up to 50, 60 bucks a month, which means we are subsidizing Google's content, Facebook's content, under this theory that we really want to make sure that every service provider can be reached. So that's what's really going on. Net neutrality is fundamentally going to raise the cost and centralize even more power of even larger ISPs, which are already centralized within the government. But fundamentally, Google and Facebook love this because it's going to lower their cost of distribution. Interesting enough, there's a book that came out called The Offensive Internet. I think that's what it's called, written by a professor, Nussbaum, and another guy called Sunstein, who contributed to it. This is a set of academics from the University of Chicago. And if you read this book, it basically says, in fact, Sunstein, who was Obama's information czar, says, we
is
need
that
to
Chaz
start
Sunstein?
Monitoring chat. Yeah, Chaz Sunstein. We need to start monitoring chat rooms. We need to ensure that conspiracy theory websites do not reach people. So in the midst of this play, we want net neutrality, which is all essentially camouflage for lowering the cost for Google and the other companies. The other piece that's going on is to control the internet. By the way, I believe Sunstein's now at Harvard Law School. So
yeah, I believe you're right.
Tim Wu, who came up with this concept of net neutrality, who knows nothing about email, by the way, doesn't even know the origin about it. Columbia University guy, also an alma mater of Harvard Law School, which is, by the way, where Elizabeth Warren went. The reason I'm sharing with you these interconnections is these guys are so clever at making things appealing to the end public. But in reality, what it is, it's about centralizing power, socializing the internet, so we all as consumers are going to pay a lot more so Google and Facebook get subsidized. That's what's fundamentally going on with net neutrality. Obviously, we all want the internet to be easier to access, but this is not the way to do it. The way you really do it is advanced competition. Both parties haven't done that, Owen. We've seen the consolidation among four major telcos. The real way that you really get net neutrality is by ensuring that we could have hundreds of ISPs, not just Verizon, AT&T, but that's not what these guys are really talking about.
Well, it's kind of, to me, based on the way you described it, it's kind of like soft fascism, where the government implies or implements net neutrality. And like you said, it kind of seems fair. Everybody will pay the same thing. But wait a second. If Google and, you know, YouTube or Netflix or whatever is making the most money and having to use the most bandwidth, why should they be paying the same as the little guy? And that's where you get to pricing people out of the market. So if they're paying the same but getting different money in, different profits in, then they can basically just price out their competition who can't even afford to compete with them. Am I kind of analyzing that correctly?
Yeah, exactly. And the reality is these guys are very – the key thing you use is these guys are very clever. They also use the word blocking versus throttling. Blocking means, which we none of us want, completely blocking. Let's say these guys like Sunstein said, we don't want InfoWars, blocking. Throttling is deciding how much bandwidth you get. Throttling, in my view, is okay. And I'm willing to – why should I want to pay for massive amounts of bandwidth when I don't really need it, right?
Well, yeah, it's like just the individual consumer who says – like for me, I get as much MPS into my internet in my home as possible because that I stream videos all the time. Where someone else might not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So in fact, if you go to, I think the website's called SaveTheInternet.com. Again, I don't know who wrote this website, but if you read the propaganda on it, it talks about, hey, there we need to help black businesses. We need to help black people, right? Because black businesses are the site that are going to get most screwed over with if net neutrality is stopped by a JPI. So they're very clever at targeting and using, you know, Malcolm X talked about it. He goes, what's interesting with the liberal wing of the establishment is that they basically know how to use Negroes and black people and poor people to their benefit. Everything is always about helping the poor black person and the poor white person, right? And based on that, they sell their bill of goods. And if you're against them, then you're a racist. And that's how Elizabeth Warren works. And that's how, you know, the liberal wing of the establishment works. The so-called conservative wing of the establishment, unfortunately, isn't as clever as the liberal wing. And that's what we are dealing with in Massachusetts. So in Massachusetts, it's a uniparty. You have the liberal wing and the conservative wing, so-called the Democrats and Republicans are one. And I'm essentially the only guy who's going out after them hard. You know, when I supported President Trump on, he has every right
30 to use seconds, the word, Shiva, 30 seconds.
Yeah, he has every right to use the word Pocahontas. We're the ones who put the test kit out there, went viral, and then the major media gets involved. So we're the guys that are making the race in Massachusetts very interesting. So Shiva for Senate is really the, you know, the movement here for truly independence in the country. So I think us winning in Massachusetts is going to set a wave for what I believe will be another type of American revolution, taking off from the disruption that President Trump caused, which is all good.
Making talk radio great again. It's The War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
Donald Trump said on this video that he likes kissing pretty women and that...
You don't?
Sir, let me... Can I finish?
You like kissing ugly women?
Excuse me. Folks, I am standing in the middle of 1984 civilization.
While Dr. Shiva Iyaduray was breaking down net neutrality, The crew here was going through some other developments on Elizabeth Warren that I wasn't exactly privy to. So I actually just wanted to bring Harrison in to break this down. I remember Mulvaney coming out and laying into this bureaucracy really hard that I'd never really heard of. But apparently there's some background there with Elizabeth Warren setting it up and then using it as a slush fund. Harrison, you were looking this up during the break. Yeah. So what did you discover exactly?
Well, yeah, I'd read some headlines before this, and when Dr. Shiva was on, I printed it out and went over. This is a Mother Jones article. Elizabeth Warren calls out Trump's meddling in the agency she created. And so this is according to The Hill. When the Dodd-Frank financial regulation bill was first marked up back in 2010, basically she sort of slipped in this provision that created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, and essentially it had no oversight whatsoever and could sort of do whatever it wanted. It says the power invested in the director of the CFPB was and still is unencumbered by any limiting of, authority of those elected to govern. So this is somebody acting totally independently. And basically when Mulvaney came in, and I'm sure at Trump's insistence, he is just taking a look at this. And that's causing Elizabeth Warren to have a little bit of heartburn and get a little bit worried because, according to this article from the New York Post, it bounced business owners and industry reps from secret meetings it held with Democratic operatives, radical civil rights activists, trial lawyers, and other, quote, community advisors, according to a report by the House Financial Services Committee. And it also funneled a large portion of the more than $5 billion in penalties collected from defendants to community organizers aligned with Democrats, a slush fund by any other name.
Oh, my gosh. Wait a second. So they literally created like their own little like fascist tribe.
Right. Well, I imagine, I mean, from what I read from this, they create this bureau that is the Consumer Financial Protection. They find that businesses have done things wrong. They fine them. They
or give them fees. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Yes,
obviously
right. Very
ooh, like net neutrality and the Patriot Act. Mm.
Yeah, they're really good at naming things the opposite of what they are. Mm-hmm. And then they take this money that they've collected through these fees and just funnel it right into these community activists and radical leftists.
This literally sounds to me like a fascist Nazi bureaucracy, just some little wing that's just out here operating independently, kind of deciding what businesses are going to basically get fair ratings for consumers. I mean, I'm trying to understand what the role of this actually is, if that's not it.
I'm not too sure about that because I haven't looked into that. Really, the concern now is the fact that it was just a slush fund. I'm not sure what their justification was for collecting the fees, but the fact that they used those fees for partisan purposes and the whole thing was sort of created on partisan grounds and apparently just has no oversight from anybody elected. So in that way, it's certainly not democratic, certainly not representative because they can essentially do whatever they want. I mean, not anymore because now we have Trump in office, but they could before now.
And of course, that's why Elizabeth Warren is freaking out. And that's
right.
The story then. Okay, so that makes sense. So Elizabeth Warren gets her dirty little mitts into the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, potentially creates her own little slush fund there. Mulvaney starts to look into it, I would imagine at the command of Trump. And then all of a sudden, the fake Indian Pocahontas is freaking out. And then the nerve, though, go back to that story. She says, see, this is the kind of stuff, this is why I have to exercise every day because my head would explode from anger. She says Mulvaney's actions are a waste of taxpayer dollars. Ladies and gentlemen, we have spent $7 million on the Russian collusion probe for no reason at all. And we have a $17 million hush fund protecting congressmen and women from sexual assault allegations that we don't even get to know about. You want to talk about a waste of money?
Let's make talk radio great again. This is The War Room.
This is Roger Stone, and you're at InfoWars, which is central because the move to take Donald Trump down in a deep state coup is most definitely afoot. Perhaps the only ones who don't seem to realize it are the president's lawyers. and hopefully they and he will come to their senses soon and understand the grave danger posed by Mr. Mueller and his posse and a cabal of Republican and Democratic Party operatives from the elite wings of both parties who have a backup strategy in the 25th Amendment. A great discussion there about the CFPB and Richard Cordray. This unit, which is allegedly designed to protect consumers, was created under the Dodd-Frank legislation, and it has no executive or legislative oversight. It's a rogue agency of left-wing zealots who have penalized the banking industry, the auto industry, the payday loan industry with massive fines and harassment. Most recently, Mr. Cordray stepped down from his position as the director. The deputy director, under some rules written in Dodd-Frank, would allow her to step up to the chairmanship, but the Trump administration holds that superseding law shows that the president will fill that vacancy. The president filled it with Mr. Mulvaney, now wearing two hats as the OMB director and also the head of this Consumer Protection Board. This made Pocahontas, the correct term, Pocahontas, very, very unhappy. So there is the backdrop on that. Owen, there's no question whatsoever that the fix is in. With the news that the Deutsche Bank had been subpoenaed for Donald Trump's financial records of almost 30 years ago, plus a $300 million portfolio regarding real estate development, shows how far afield Mr. Mueller has run.
Well, it's something that I think a lot of people didn't realize when they were reporting, but Trump said that if this probe went into his own personal bank records, he would shut it down. So,
well, and then there is obviously every day we learn more about General Flynn. As you just saw, I have a piece up at Infowars.com now that lays out the inside story. I mean, in essence, the deep state illegally surveilled General Flynn. They listened to his phone conversations, read his email, read his text messages, and then they went and questioned him in an early morning raid, startling him, under which he allegedly lied to an FBI director. This seems like entrapment to me, a complete setup. And then we learned that the agent to whom he allegedly lied is the same agent, Mr. Strzok, I guess it is, who interviewed both Susan Rice and Cheryl Mills, the henchwomen of Hillary Clinton. I mean, the more we learn, the more this entire probe stinks, and the partisan nature of it becomes clearer and clearer. The beleaguered, jut-jawed general, I think, was torpedoed by the White House lawyers. As we have reported exclusively here at Infowars, General Flynn did not break with the president. The president broke with him. They ended their joint defense cooperation or their legal cooperation almost 10 days ago, and they threw the beleaguered general over the side. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. It was the final blow by which he took a guilty plea, which he had been resisting. And now the question is, what will he say? General Flynn obviously does not want to go to jail. You have an Obama-appointed judge sitting over this farce, and it is presumed that someone instructed him to reach out to the Russian ambassador. I believe, and as I say in this piece, whoever that someone is the same person who told him to tell no one, which would explain why he lied to the vice president. But why he would lie to the FBI, political atmospherics don't seem right. So it's hard to say, but our thoughts are with General Flynn. I think he and his family are stunned by this betrayal. And I am hopeful that the decision to throw General Flynn to the wolves will not be terminal for the Trump presidency.
Well, it's just so ridiculous, Roger. The very basis, the very foundation for this investigation is based on lies, is based on made up information, made up dossiers, fake news. It's like, why don't they just say that Donald Trump colluded with the Martians and then interview everyone that's related to Trump or has spoken to Trump in the last 20 years, find out one or two lies that they say in this ridiculous investigation, and then throw them in jail? I mean, that's basically what they're doing.
Well, let me point out to you that Rice and Mills, the Hillary aides involved in the email scandal, both received immunity for their lies.
And they were both interviewed by Peter Strzok.
Exactly. And James Clapper, the NSA director under Obama, lies under oath to the Congress, says that there is no metadata collection system. Edward Snowden proves to the world that that's a lie. And Clapper pays no penalty for his lie to the American people. Yet another member of the shaved head club. So it is really odd the way these deep state criminals operate with impunity, breaking the law in their efforts to bring down the president. Their Russian collusion thing has produced exactly zero in terms of real collusion. They try to make the most casual and normal contacts with Russians appear like a crime. Oh, my God. He communicated with Julian Assange. Well, many, many journalists have done so.
A bear eats a salmon that hops out of a river. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, so Donnie Jr. communicated with Julian Assange. Yes, and so he's a journalist. But they have so attempted to hypnotize the American people into believing that Assange is some kind of Russian agent that it's almost laughable.
Well, I think we are starting to see the tide turning and the pendulum go the opposite way beyond just our reporting on these things. Where you've got Jim Jordan calling for new investigations, you've got Chuck Grassley calling out the entire farce of an investigation. But then I think, honestly, a huge development that isn't getting enough reporting, top DOJ official demoted amid probes of contracts with Trump dossier form. So it turns out this senior Justice Department official who just got demoted, Bruce Orr, was meeting with Christopher Steele and with Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS. So, whoa, all of a sudden another swamp creature is identified in this mess.
Look, I think it's very clear that when the Republican money pit of Paul Singer ran out, GPS Fusion thought they would sell their fabricated product to a whole new client, the Democrats, Hillary. And their backers in the administration. This dossier, a total fraud, is what they lean on as their rationalization for surveillance on top aides to Donald Trump. Last night on Fox, I saw stunning testimony by John Brennan, the Islamic convert who was the head of the CIA. And it is incredible that he says we turned over all our information on Trump's campaign aides to the FBI. Why did he have any such information? Why were they spying on the Trump campaign? Political espionage, 10 times worse than Watergate. We are here at the War Room. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
War Room. I'm your co-host, Roger Stone, with my colleague, Owen Schroyer, on deck in Texas. And I'm reporting from our new InfoWars Bureau here in New York City, the Big Apple. This expansion is only possible, the War Room is only possible, thanks to the generosity and the good consumer sense of the InfoWarriors and those in the Patriot community who understand that we are entirely, completely listener and supporter, listener and viewer supported. We don't have any wealthy right-wing billionaires standing in the wings writing huge checks to InfoWars. We work for every penny. And we have become the cutting edge of those who will resist the attempt to replace our president. There's not going to be a silent coup in America as long as we at InfoWars are on deck. But this takes listener and viewer support. So I urge you now to do your Christmas shopping at the InfoWars.com store. Whether it is the all-natural supplements or the T-shirts or the incredible books such as The Making of the President 2016 by Roger Stone, a book I highly commend if you are interested in how Donald Trump pulled off the greatest single upset in American history. And then there's some of my real favorites, like DNA Force at 33% off. The Brain Force Plus. Get a case of this. Send it to a liberal that you know. They need it. These are great products. And you won't find anything on the site that hasn't been rigorously tested and approved by Alex himself. And in many cases, there are thousands of satisfied testimonials from InfoWarriors and those who support the work we do here. You can see every product has a multi-star rating, 4.9 stars for The Making of the President 2016. So folks, go to the site now and support the fight for truth and freedom and real net neutrality by going to the InfoWars.com site. Now, it is approximately 4:20, and I'm going to bring on two gentlemen who have been extremely active and effective in the fight for legalized cannabis. Tyler Nixon, California attorney, longtime libertarian activist, and no stranger to the InfoWar viewers, reports from a different studio here in the New York Bureau. And also joining us is his guest, Patrick Moore, longtime California hemp and cannabis activist and a great, great American. Gentlemen, welcome to the War Room.
Honored to be here today,
Roger. So, Tyler, let's start with you. You think that, as I do, that despite the president's view, that Jeff Sessions seeks to snuff out legalized cannabis in the 29 states where it's legal. But you've been telling me about something that may be just as dangerous, which is a corporate and establishment takeover of cannabis as we know it. So lay it out for our viewers, please.
Sure. Thanks, Roger. Well, you know, I don't think there's any issue that has a more populist base foundation, what have you, a more Democratic base, and frankly, a more Republican base than the reform of cannabis laws and the end of cannabis prohibition in America, which has been coming up on 100-year travesty against humanity, which is, you know, waging a war against human beings over what is effectively a plant, over what are flowers, and, you know, caging people, busting down doors, just, you know, gutting the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments to the Constitution and other civil liberties, the very notion of self-ownership. 29 states, 30 states just about now have, in one form or another, relaxed prohibition laws, whether it be for medical reasons or for recreational purposes. And the bottom line with that is that we have almost enough to have a constitutional majority, to have a constitutional amendment, if you need, you know, if need be, to reform these laws. And across the country, the polls have turned around. I mean, you're looking at 90% support for medicinal and upwards of 60%, 65 to 67% support for what's called adult use or, quote, recreational cannabis use. Personally, I don't think you should have to justify to anybody what you put in your body or why you put it there. I think it's a constitutional right. I think it's a human right, you know, to have control of your own health care and lifestyle choices. That being said, just over 50% of the Republican Party now supports Republican base voters support the relaxation of or the end prohibition laws as we know them today. And yet we have an obstinate, reactionary federal government and federal officials and law enforcement officials who would, you know, keep us in the dark ages, keep humanity from accessing and benefiting from the many, many potential medicinal uses, not to mention just personal uses for the cannabis plant, the cannabis flower. I mean, the research being done now is absolutely amazing. I think it's a disgrace. I think our future generations will look back upon this time and think of us as savages for having denied humanity the benefits of this particularly amazing substance, which is we're hardwired for it. We have what's called an endocannabinoid system in our body, and we actually have receptors built into our brains and part of our entire sort of, I guess we call it the limbic system, which is meant to receive the benefits of this particular plant, whether it be the CBD or the THC. Either way, it's really an amazing, and I don't think we've even scratched the surface. I think we may come to find that we don't need pharmaceutical drugs, that this plant itself may end up being a cure-all, a panacea for humanity. And certainly, I believe God put it here for our purposes because, we're built for it. Our human bodies are built for it. And it's a disgrace that we're fighting inertia in which basically a coalition ranging from prison guards, if you can believe it, to prosecutors, to police chiefs, sheriffs, and so forth, who have a vested interest in keeping these programs of prohibition going, in keeping the control and keeping the ability to control the citizenry and bust into people's houses and seize property, civil asset forfeiture, has been kept going. There's no other support for it. And it's inexplicable. I would defy anybody to come up with an issue in which you have 90% support and a majority, almost a supermajority of the states have voted to change it. And yet the federal government and the federal legislators refuse to respond, refuse to react, refuse to, assent to the will of the people and the overwhelming will. Right. This isn't a 50-50 issue. We had healthcare shoved down our throats, Obamacare, right, with barely 50%. Tyler? And not even, go ahead.
Let me stop you there. Let me say importantly that Tyler and Patrick both join me on the advisory board of the United States Cannabis Coalition, and we'll be right back with more about the war on drugs.
Making talk radio great again. It's the War Room with Owen Schroyer at Infowars.com/show.
We're going to make America great again, people. Donald Trump's going to bring jobs, and then you're going to have work to do. It's going to be great. Now I'm being shoved and being assaulted here.
Welcome back. You're at the War Room, and I'm Roger Stone, your host, reporting from our new New York bureau. Joining me, continuing this conversation, is Tyler Nixon, a California attorney, longtime Republican and libertarian activist, brilliant writer, and longtime drug reform advocate. And from California, Patrick Moore of the California Hemp Project for Education. Let's go to you, Patrick, but Tyler, I'm going to let you walk through with Patrick what you see going on inside the marijuana industry, which has been legalized in 29 states.
Well, right now, one of the things I'm finding most concerning, being a broader hemp activist, we really look at the multi-trillion dollar industry in food, fuel, fiber, and medicine. The fact that the medicine's the focus here in California, and that's what most people are talking about, it's important. But we understand that when we replace petroleum with cannabis, that's the game changer. And that's the battle we're fighting for here on the West Coast. And one of the big issues we're having is we're watching a lot of the states that have industrial hemp have their fields raised by fire because of the THC limits. So trying to keep it at below 0.3% THC is irrational, bizarre, is a United Nations standard, and it makes absolutely no sense. And it's going to cripple our industrial hemp market here in America while we're watching Germany and Canada and China move forward in huge ways, replacing petroleum, replacing nuclear with a simple, sustainable resource, cannabis hemp.
Patrick, one of the fights that that we agree on and that is being waged currently, for years we heard tax and regulate it, which of course comes from what I would call progressive fascists who effectively want us to purchase our freedom through a massive bureaucracy and regulation and a massive taxation system on what is, again, effectively an agricultural commodity. You fought that fight. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that and your work with Jack Herer, who's was a pioneer, frankly, in the hemp and cannabis reform movements.
Absolutely. No, if I had any idea, as George Soros stepped into the scene in 1996 and helped us at the very end of Prop 215, we had been working on the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative before then, and in 96, 95, a lot of coalitions came together and agreed to take a small step, a baby step, and legalize medical marijuana. And right towards the end of that, the DPA stepped in with a bunch of funds, I think once they realized it was going to happen. And the DPA is where George Soros sits on the board of directors and has used that as his central tool, although nowadays there are dozens of offshoots of that, other organizations he runs, to steer cannabis back into the hands of the corporate elite. I believe perhaps the entire process of prohibition has been to get the number one natural resource on the planet back in the hands of very few. If it was once a very dangerous narcotic, then it makes sense that only very rich, powerful, elite people should be in control of it. If not, you'd have 10, 20, 30 million farmers, hemp farmers worldwide being part of that economy instead of what we see today is the 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 oil barons that really control the majority of the world's resources.
It can't be overlooked. Opioids. Go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. No, real quick, Jack found in his research for the book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, a government study, the Agriculture Department found that they used 6% of the farm had set aside. We have a reserve farmland. I think it's 400,000 acres in case everything goes bad. We got that. We use 6% of the farmland we have set aside. It's feral right now. Cultivated industrial hemp. We could replace petroleum in America today. There's the book. There's the book to change the world. Yes. And it's a great historical overview. Again, it's my favorite historical book. Absolutely.
Yeah, I would urge everybody to pick up a copy of The Emperor Wears No Clothes if you're interested in learning about the history of hemp in our country, Hemp for Victory, which was a World War II program. Our founding fathers used it. It was an essential for rope, for paper. And it's really insane that this mania to control people's minds and tell them what they can or cannot put in their body by way of prohibiting substances under penalty of being caged and prosecuted and have your property stolen by the government, that they would deny it to us and also deny us the ability to use this agricultural crop, which has no psychoactive effects, which is hemp, basically. It's really disgraceful. Pick up The Emperor Wears No Clothes for sure. It's very factual. It's really a lot of clippings from historic magazines. It talks about the Hearst companies and the collusion that happened amongst the barons who gave us the opioids instead of having cannabis as for pain relief, which we unfortunately see destroying a lot of lives in America. Roger, you still with us?
Yes, indeed. as you know, we have all joined together in the United States Cannabis Coalition, along with Judge Andrew Napolitano, Bill Maher, Congressman Matt Gaetz, and there are some new members who will be revealed shortly. Our difference between us and many of the other fine organizations fighting for cannabis legalization is we have a short-term mission, which is to hold President Trump to his pre-election day pledge to protect the access to legalized medicinal marijuana by millions of Americans who are benefiting today in the 29 states where it's legal. Recently, as you know, some cannabis activists objected to my speaking at a Los Angeles exposition on marijuana, ignoring a long history of advocacy for legalization that goes all the way back to William F. Buckley Jr. It's unrealistic, in my view, to think that liberals and Democrats acting alone will legalize cannabis. Indeed, Democrat presidents such as Obama and Clinton are bigger anti-drug warriors than George Bush and Richard Nixon. Put more people in jail for the nonviolent crime of possessing cannabis. So how do you explain, gentlemen, what is going on inside the marijuana movement? Tyler, I'm going to throw to you.
Greed, crony corporatism, control. It's prohibition light. It's been brought to you by progressive fascist type Democrats who would rather control this industry, to have a massive bureaucracy, the old iron triangle. You have an interest group and a corporate interest that has a bureaucracy, and then legislators that continually keep that bureaucracy going, that enforces the cartel. That's exactly what the original anti-prohibition philosopher, so to speak, but also one of the great economists of our time, Milton Friedman, used to say, that the bureaucracy exists, the prohibition exists to preserve the cartel. It just depends on what cartel you're talking about, whether it's totally black market or whether it's a cartel of crony corporatism that is self-serving, that writes rules effectively that make it so that only certain people are able to run businesses or afford to run businesses, barriers to entry and so forth. And that's exactly what Patrick Moore has been fighting in California. And the fight goes on, despite there being billionaires, tech billionaires and all, jumped in, and everybody wants to make a big quick buck and sold us down the river, effectively sold our rights down the river. We have to purchase our freedom with these onerous regulations and barriers to entry, in which you can only have these massive corporate entities running and controlling legal cannabis. The fight goes on. We will have our freedom someday. We will not have prohibition light. And what is Patrick, what did Jack Harris say about if it is not legal, if you can't go ahead.
I'm going to hold you up. With 59 seconds to go, we're going to come back and continue this incredible conversation. It's only at InfoWars that you will get the true story about the fight to protect legalized cannabis in the 29 states. I know personally from my discussions with the President of the United States that he plans to honor that pledge. What then of Jeff Sessions and his constant threats to a legal industry that is providing medicine for millions and employing hundreds of thousands? We'll be right back on The War Room with Tyler Nixon and Patrick Moore, and more on this fascinating topic. Welcome back. I'm Roger Stone, and we are in the middle of a full-throated dialogue about the future of legalized cannabis in the United States. We're joined by Patrick Moore, who is the head of the California Hemp Project for Education, and California attorney Tyler Nixon. We are just going to wrap this up. Let's go to you, Patrick. You were in the middle of a thought about the future of the marijuana industry.
Well, I find great irony that last week the attorney general was asked clearly if he thought heroin was more dangerous than cannabis, and he said no. And that's something the attorney general for the last 8 years hadn't been willing to say. Every time that question was put towards him, he skipped around it. And finally, Sessions said, no, it's not as bad as heroin. So ironically, our current attorney general is more progressive than the last attorney general about cannabis, despite all the things he's been saying. Now, I think we have, a multi-trillion dollar crop we need to start focusing on. Mercedes-Benz, one third of all Mercedes-Benz produced this year is made out of cannabis. That's the dialogue we need to start having. I appreciate the fact that the medical movement and the dispensaries and all this focus on growing here in California, and yet we're still cutting down our redwoods to make paper. Germany, Canada, China's not doing that so much anymore. And that's the phase of cannabis. Once we got the medical set up and once we had, you know, access to adult use, we want to start focusing on industrial hemp and fair and equal access. That, I believe, will be the largest change in the 21st century, enabling American citizens to produce plastics, food, fuel, fiber in a sustainable way that that assures safety for the planet. That's the core of the cannabis movement. Our founding fathers insisted, George Washington insisted with an explanation point, take the Indian hemp seed and sow it everywhere. That's what we're trying
to do. All right, Patrick Moore, I'm afraid we have to leave it there. Our thanks to Tyler Nixon, California attorney and longtime libertarian and Republican activist, and Patrick Moore of the California Hemp Project for Education. Gentlemen, many thanks for joining us at the War Room. Joining me now for a quick discussion of election reform, badly needed in America, is Christina Tobin of the Free and Equal Elections Foundation. I had the privilege of addressing a symposium that Christina and her people organized recently. So, Christina, welcome to the War Room. So we are having trouble making our connection. We'll be right back with Christina. In the meantime, I want to remind you that I am being sued in the District of Columbia. I am being investigated by the House and the Senate Intelligence Committees and the Senate Judiciary Committee, at least subject to an inquiry regarding non-existent Russian collusion. My personal legal bills have reached almost $500,000. Contrary to what you may read on the net, I am not a wealthy man. I make a comfortable living and I have a great family, but I need your help under this kind of liberal onslaught. Protect Democracy, the group that is suing me, is using this bogus, frivolous harassment lawsuit, which has no merit, for the purposes of fundraising. You can help by going to stonedefensefund.com. That's stonedefensefund.com. And everyone in the Stone family will be most grateful. Continuing now, we are seeking Christina Tobin from the Free and Equal Elections Foundation. This group has been in fighting for the inclusion of minor party candidates in the presidential debates. As many of you, I think, know, the Presidential Commission on Debates is not appointed by the president, is not a commission, and most certainly is not about open debate. Essentially run by the Republicans and the Democrats working together, the League of Women Voters long ago canceled their cooperation with the Presidential Commission on Debates because of their rigorous efforts to exclude the Libertarian and the Green Party candidates from the national dialogue. The criteria for why a presidential candidate should be on the ballot today, under their rules, pertains to polling. It's a movable number, but they will say, well, no candidate will be admitted to the debate unless they achieve 15%. And no candidate can achieve 15%, of course, minor party candidate, if they are not included in the debate. It's the proverbial catch-22. The co-chairmen of the Presidential Commission on Debates are former Republican and Democratic National Committee chairman. They're not interested in competition. The criteria should quite clearly be, are you able to theoretically win 270 electoral votes? In other words, are you on the ballot in enough states to win? She joins us now, Christina Tobin from the Free and Equal Elections Foundation. Because we're a little short on time, we're going to pick it up on the other side to get in a full discussion. But welcome to the War Room, Christina Tobin.
Thank you, Roger, so much for having me.
So tell people about the mission of the Free and Equal movement that you have been spearheading.
Well, our slogan is more voices, more choices. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization whose mission is to broaden electoral choices through education and direct positive action. So we're here to really ignite a spark, a movement, an independent movement to replace these not accountable people in office with accountable politicians, elected officials, starting from the bottom up, because that's where real change happens. And of course, the congressional races in 2018, very important.
You know, I think the work you're doing is very important. You know, I remember a poll just before the 2012 election in which some 74% of the people said they wish there was another choice. Well, there was another choice. The Libertarian Party candidate, Gary Johnson, the Green Party candidate, Dr. Jill Stein. But the mainstream media didn't want anybody to know that. They could not generate the kind of free coverage that the Republican and Democratic candidates get every day. That improved somewhat in 2016, but I think it's only because some in the mainstream media believed that the candidacy of Governor Gary Johnson and Governor Bill Weld, both good friends of mine, both men I admire, would siphon votes from Donald Trump. CNN particularly gave extraordinary coverage to the Libertarian ticket. A step in the right direction, but opening these debates to me is the single most important order of business. Now, when I was supporting Gary Johnson in 2012, we looked at the lawsuits filed by Ralph Nader and by Patrick Buchanan. There was no point in filing those suits again. But at the end of the day, this monopoly will be broken when the Free and Equal Foundation successfully persuades one of the big media outlets to sponsor their own debate and they get inclusion from all the candidates. That, to me, seems to be the secret. Christina, what do you think?
I agree with you on the fact that the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is run by the former chairs of the Democratic and Republican parties, the League of Women Voters retracted their support from the CPD, Commission on Presidential Debates, in 1988, stating it has perpetuated a fraud on the American voters. As Ralph Nader, independent presidential candidate, Ralph Nader's ballot access coordinator in 2008, I would have served for Dr. Ron Paul as well had he ran. You know, it takes over 500,000 signatures just to get on the ballot as an independent for president. And I was with Ralph at a moment staring at all of the press of the DNC. And he said, Christina, you know, I could interview with every member of the press here and not reach but only 3-5% of what the CPD reaches. So while I do commend those who are filing suits against the CPD to raise awareness, I don't trust the CPD. The CPD is corrupt. Even if it opened it to a third or fourth candidate, look at the sponsors and the people who back the CPD, which again is a product, a very powerful tool the two-party, really one-party system uses to create this illusion, this facade that there are only two, but really one party. There are not. There are many individuals that have ran for president, over 30 in 2012, and I hope and foresee.
Christina, I've got to stop you there. We'll pick it up on the other side. You're in the right place, the War Room with Roger Stone and Christina Tobin.
Long, long distance, always through such strong resistance.
Is political agenda operations posing as organic movements. That is the Me Too movement and the Trump-Russian collusion probe. We're going to have, well, I guess actually there is, now there's news breaking on the Me Too thing, the sexual assault thing. Trent Franks, Republican representative, is about to resign because of allegations that are about to surface about him. Wow. Now, this is a guy that I felt was a patriot and I thought had his head screwed on straight. And now he's drained because of allegations against him. So here comes the environment in which they've created starting to manifest the political agenda it was created for. Just remove anyone and everyone as to fit your political agenda. Meanwhile, with the Trump-Russia collusion probe, we're starting to get some backlash. We now know who Peter Stroke Strzok is and who Bruce Orr is, who has now been demoted for essentially what looks like, you could say, colluding with Fusion GPS and Christopher Steele. Here's John Bowne breaking it down.
This is not your mother's FBI. What's wrong with the FBI is not the average everyday agent. They're great. It's the management at the FBI that is the problem.
Talk about the wolf guarding the hen house. Peter Strzok, FBI deputy and Russia expert, was recently fired from the Trump collusion investigation by special counsel Robert Mueller. Strzok also led the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server. We now know Strzok changed the language describing Clinton's criminal actions as grossly negligent to the softer legalese of extremely careless. Strzok was assigned to the task of interviewing Hillary Clinton, Huma Abedin, and Cheryl Mills. His notes claim that the women denied knowing anything about Hillary's secret server, despite emails proving otherwise. Strzok essentially watered down all of the evidence surrounding Hillary's illegal server, and then was the agent responsible for questioning Michael Flynn.
But you have to ask yourself, given the history of everybody involved in that case, who were involved in the Hillary email server case, where they conducted a totally irresponsible, unprofessional criminal investigation, and then they turn up the heat on this investigation of Flynn, the same agency. This is politics. The Bureau has been politicized.
The Justice Department recently verified that Strzok had been exchanging emails insulting President Trump and was engaging in an extramarital affair with Mueller's trial lawyer, Lisa Page. And that was enough controversy to have Strzok move to a human resources desk where Devin Nunes pestered Strzok for an interview.
All we were doing was sending two of our investigators down there to start to begin to go through the documents to ensure that the documents that we had subpoenaed were provided. When my investigators got there, there were four other staff from the other side of the aisle, including a member of Congress, the ranking member from our committee, which seems to me to be very bizarre behavior since
Adam Schiff was there. Adam Schiff was there. Two Nancy Pelosi staffers were there, correct?
Yeah, so I think here's the bizarre part of it. They didn't support the subpoena. They said there was no reason to see this documentation. So I don't know why they would run down there and be the first people to review
the information.
What
does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that they're very, very nervous.
Nunes told the Daily Caller, this is part of a months-long pattern by the DOJ and FBI of stonewalling and obstructing the committee's oversight work, particularly oversight of their use of the Steele dossier. Unfortunately, Strzok is just one of the Democrats fueling Mueller's witch hunt. The Daily Caller reports at least nine of Mueller's prosecutors have donated to Democratic political candidates, and all of the legal actions taken so far in Mueller's investigation have involved pro-Democrat prosecutors. The lawyers working the money laundering case against former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort and his associate Rick Gates have donated to Obama's presidential campaigns. Strzok is the face of the
infiltration. All right, that's John Bowne. We'll be right back with more of the War Room. Don't go anywhere.
Is the War Room.
All right, I've got a ton of news I want to get to. I'll just go ahead and put the phone number out there in case I get time for calls. If you want to call in, 888-201-2244, 888-201-2244. Stats of news, and I do want to get to your calls. But first, First, I haven't even mentioned the fact that today is the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And one of my crew members brought that up. I'm glad that we did that. So let's just remember what our military members do for this country. And let's just remember that they literally put their lives on the line every day. So we salute our service members and we remember the victims of Pearl Harbor. Now, moving on, what's going on in Jerusalem right now is really indicative. And for me personally, and I even said this on the show yesterday, I don't understand people saying that this moving Jerusalem or moving the capital of Israel to Jerusalem or the embassy to Jerusalem as something that pleases Trump's base. I never heard people chanting, you know, Jerusalem is the capital at any Trump rallies. No, it was build that wall and lock her up, which hasn't happened yet. But nonetheless, so this comes down. I'm kind of numb to it. I don't really have too many emotions. It seems to me like kind of like a no-brainer, like, yeah, duh, Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. But because of the political bullying that's going on in that region and the violence, it's not been considered the capital. But Trump doesn't kowtow to bullying, so he goes ahead and moves forward with it. Whatever you think about that, that's just what happened. But now that I'm seeing the response, I'm starting to understand it more. And this is always the case with a Trump move. He always makes a move, but you don't understand the move until you see the next move. I don't know if that makes sense. It's like in a game of chess when you make a move and it might not make sense at the time. And then you see your opponent's next move and then you come in with a crazy move that puts him into check. That's basically what Trump has done, because so many people out there, myself included, I never considered myself an expert on Israel or Palestine or anything like that. I had just basic knowledge. But now you're really starting to understand and see the vitriol and hate. Now, I'm seeing conflicting stories. Some people say that if a Jewish person goes into the Muslim Arab areas of Jerusalem, they're basically scorned and hated on and not safe. Some people say that's not true. I don't know. I've never been to Jerusalem. My guess is probably it is true, considering we see the same things if an American walks through some of these radical Islam areas. But here's the amazing thing. First, first, let's start with this. Let's start with clip six first. So here's something, again, this is the response to Trump that really is indicative of everything and shows you how Trump plays chess with this. So Trump moves the capital or says he recognizes Jerusalem as the capital and he's going to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Now, what happens? The media freaks out, right? The media freaks out. Everyone freaks out. The Democrats freak out. The liberals freak out. Oh my gosh, it's this huge deal. But wait a second. Did you know that the three previous presidents, Clinton, Bush, and Obama, all promised that they would do the exact same thing, didn't come through with their promise, yet there was no media outrage? Here's a clip of three presidents before Trump promising to move the embassy to Jerusalem.
Jerusalem is still the capital of Israel and must remain an undivided city.
Oh, they're cheering.
As soon as I take office, I will begin the process of moving the United States ambassador to the city of Israel as chosen as its capital.
I continue to say that Jerusalem will be the capital of Israel. And I have said that before, and I will say it again.
And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Okay. We will move the American embassy eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem.
No! Trump is not allowed to say that. How dare Trump say that? What? Obama said it? Therefore, Clinton said it? Bush said it? I don't care. How dare Trump say it?
It is time to officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Okay. So President Trump fulfills the promise of the three previous presidents. But again, this should be a learning moment. This should be a teaching moment for so many people out there. Do you not see the double standards in the media? How people don't understand it after events like this. And I think this is why Trump does it, so that more people understand it. Hello, the last three presidents called for it. There was no freak out by the media, no freak out by liberal activists, no violence, no craziness, nothing. But Trump does it, media freaks out, liberals protest, and now they're all planning violence. In fact, I mean, I've got all of these videos. You've got the Hamas leader calling for a new intifada in the face of Israel. You've got a crazed man attacking a Jewish restaurant, trying to break in and flying a Palestinian flag over it. You've got CNN reporting on all the injuries in the West Bank. You know, I've got this stack of news here. I mean, look at this. Again, all three presidents said they were going to do this. No outrage. Now Trump does it. There's outrage. Do you understand? State Department warns Americans they are in danger from terror attacks worldwide following Trump's Jerusalem decision. Okay, so not only to me does this shed light on the double standard in the media that's nothing but anti-Trump, it also shows you who the real psychos are. Again, whether you agree or disagree or support or don't support Trump's decision to move the embassy and declare Jerusalem the capital, just look at the results. Now the State Department says you can't even travel because people are so triggered. Okay, so who's really at fault here? Why are people that upset? Clearly, they are the ones to blame. Palestinians protest Trump move on Jerusalem. Oh yeah, protesting, rioting. Hamas calls for Palestinian uprising against Israel, calling for violence. That's nice. You're peaceful people. Arabs, Europe, UN reject Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israeli capital. I mean, these people don't even want to live in reality anymore. Turkey says U.S. pulled pin on bomb with Jerusalem decision. And it's funny because this kind of reminds me of Alyssa Milano's tweet from earlier saying, if they fire Mueller, we take to the streets. Folks, these are the violent people. These are the foaming at the mouth, vitriolic, hateful, violent people. And Trump has exposed that. So whether you like this move, whether you like the embassy in Jerusalem or not, don't you see what's happening here? These people are so outrageous. These people are so driven to violence that just the announcement of this drives them to violence and craziness. So now you've got, even in America, basically they're calling for terrorism. Terror-tied care activist calls for Israel and Jews to burn. Now this, I won't say her name, but she's a student at SLU. Her name has been published by Pamela Gaylor. I won't say it. She's a student at St. Louis University. I'm obviously very familiar with this university. Very eclectic student body, honestly. I met friends there from Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Brazil. I mean, the list goes on and on. Great people end up there. I had quite a few interesting political discussions with them, but it usually turned out okay. But see, this is taking it to the next level. So this girl, who's a student at SLU and part of CARE's leadership group, is now saying she wants people to burn in the street because of Trump's decision. And again, she represents CARE at St. Louis University, and she says she'd love to see all the Jews quarantined. Wow, talk about Nazi. She says she wants to see all the Jews quarantined. She says she wants to spit in all the faces of all the Jews she comes across. I mean, it just gets worse and worse. So again, whether you like Trump's decision or not, what's been exposed is the total violence and hatred of the Jewish people in Israel by other Arabs. So regardless of what you think politically on the issue, you can't deny that fact. They're the ones driven to violence. They're the ones that are acting out violently because of this decision. So the loving, peaceful, anti-Israel Palestinians are calling for Israel and Jews to burn, because that's the appropriate response to President Trump announcing the embassy is going to be moved there and that that is the capital. I mean, that's obviously the high ground, you know, calling for your enemy to burn. What would you expect? Now, I'm going to tell you something. I have reached out to this Palestinian girl who is a CARE leader and activist at St. Louis University, and I'm going to see if she wants to come on. I'd love to come on the show. Spout your hatred for Jews. Yeah, that'll be great. That'll really help your movement. But it's just sad that this is the case, that someone would call for people to burn over that announcement. If you don't like the announcement, okay, fine. You know, there's plenty of ways you can protest, but calling for people to burn is not going to help your cause. It's only helping Trump. And, you know, I had a kind of a weird angle to this. I'm not sure if it makes sense, but I'm going to put it out there and see if it makes sense. So basically, people that support Palestine or Palestinians in this view this as essentially an invasion, or, you know, these are foreigners. They don't belong here. How dare them? You know, whatever it is. And so they're rioting, they're burning, they're calling for, you know, basically another Holocaust. But Trump's Hitler, meanwhile. Trump is Hitler for reinstilling Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and saying that's where we're going to put the embassy. Yeah, clearly such a Nazi. He's pro-Israel and a Nazi. That's amazing. But then you have the actual people responding to Trump like Nazis would, saying burn Jews. You can't make this stuff up. But imagine, how do we not have the same outrage? I'm not calling for it. This is just how my logic and reasoning evaluates these things. How do we not have the same outrage in America for foreigners that come here? How many times have we covered at InfoWars illegal immigrants who get deported multiple times coming back to America and murdering and raping people? Remember Kate Steinle? But where's the outrage for that? So Palestinians are allowed to be outraged at Jerusalem being the capital of Israel, so they're going to protest, they're going to burn things to the ground. Leaders are calling for rioting and uprising, basically calling for war there. So that's all fine and dandy, but if non-U.S. citizens want to come here and rape and murder American citizens, and then we raise a fuss about it, how dare we? President Trump wants to do something about non-citizens coming here and raping and murdering Americans. How dare he? But if Palestinians want to burn Israel to the ground because they think that Jews are invading, that's okay. Just more liberal nonsense. That's pretty much all the liberals consist of these days. It's really quite astounding. All right, I want to go to the phones here. We've got some callers lined up. Let's start with Valerie calling in from North Korea. Go ahead, Valerie. Guys, hi. Want to pot up Valerie? There she is. Hi, Valerie.
Hi. Just wanted to say I'm a really big fan. Love your show. Love what you guys are doing. My thoughts on this whole thing, like you were saying, liberals, they really don't have any common sense. Everything that they say contradicts other things that they say. Another thing about this whole thing that Trump said and Obama said and Clinton said, I agree. Whenever it comes out of Trump's mouth, it's instantly everyone goes crazy. People don't understand, you know, Trump is actually trying to look for the good of in America.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. I mean, you don't even get beyond. You can move beyond political analysis and just look at a response to three presidents saying the exact same thing Trump said. And if that doesn't tell the story to you, you're just blind.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But this is how loving modern day liberals are, like Chelsea Handler, who supports Planned Parenthood that murders millions of women. Chelsea Handler says Sarah Sanders is a harlot wearing summer whore lipstick. So that's nice. An actual classy lady like Sarah Sanders. See, but this is what it is. See, Chelsea Handler is honestly really probably ashamed and embarrassed at what she's become. I won't name her anything, but let's just say Chelsea Handler calling Sarah Sanders a harlot is really just her pointing in a mirror. It's just, I mean, yes. These people are just sick.
They really are. I mean, they only agree with a liberal woman. They only like liberals. And then whenever, you know, like Sanders, she comes on, she's a nice woman, but they always go against her because, you know, she's for Trump.
It's really amazing. It just, again, it shows the double standards beyond any political analysis, political rhetoric. You can just look at the response to these things. And if you don't see the double standards, you're blind. You're brainwashed. Valerie, thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Brian calling in from Indiana. You are on the air, Brian.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I had two things I wanted to talk about. One was when he was talking to Dr. Shiva, and he was talking about Monsanto and what they've done, and he was saying something that you needed to eat food that you could that was open pollinated. The only problem,
yeah, he said eat organic.
Yeah, eat organic or something. But if you can't raise it in a controlled environment, that wouldn't be possible. I live on a farm and everything, and when I try to raise crops that aren't GMO modified, the pollen migrates,
yep,
and then it becomes owned by Monsanto. So
yeah, then they try to sue you.
Exactly.
Now, are you saying you've dealt with this firsthand?
I haven't, but I know that when, I haven't dealt with them firsthand, but I've dealt with the crop being done like this.
Got you. Okay. So you've had your crop invaded by Monsanto pesticides and their seeds, basically. GMO seeds.
The GMO stuff, when it pollinates, during pollination, you know, you have the wind and you have the bees and you have birds carrying the stuff around. It doesn't matter. I mean, the stuff migrates, and there's no such thing as non-GMO stuff unless you can grow it in a.
Yeah, you know, and let's not even forget, just to kind of go off on another jag here, and then you can finish your thought, Brian, but let's not forget they're also spraying chemicals in the sky that fall on literally everything.
Exactly, yeah. Well, we don't even know what all they're doing to us now. I mean, heck, just a few years ago we found out that, you know, that the military was spraying stuff over Fort Wayne, Indiana. And we didn't know that, you know, that happened back in the 50s.
Was that a test? Was that some sort of a test that they were doing?
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what it was, but they were spraying chemicals, and then people was getting sick years and years later. And
that was in Fort Wayne?
Yeah.
Interesting. When was that?
I can't remember. I hear the stuff. I don't write it down. I don't have a real good memory.
Yeah, I've got a lot of family in Fort Wayne. They've been there for a while. I wonder if they're familiar with that. You got 30 seconds left. You called in about false accusation of feminism. What did you want to say there?
Well, it was, you know, when like Roy Moore and Trump getting accused of sexual abuse and assault or whatever. You know what they did? What Trump did was locker room talk, and you can't even compare that to what's going on with Frankenstein and all of them.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just another perfect example of a double standard. And I actually think the tape's fake now. I think the Billy Bush tape is fake. Ladies and gentlemen, InfoWars does not survive on the backs of big pharmaceutical companies, big corporations, big banks. No, it's you. It's you, the listener, supporting us at InfoWarsStore.com. And what we do at InfoWarsStore.com is we provide solutions to our toxic environment. So we don't just come on here and talk to you about all the problems that affect all of humanity with the toxins in the water and the food supply, et cetera, and just the environment in general. We also provide solutions, water filters, air filters, all kinds of good stuff. Now, we have a vitamin D supplement at InfoWarsStore.com, vitamin D Winter Sun. And it's funny, and I actually bet perhaps even some of the crew and staff here would probably know what I'm talking about. This study comes out about vitamin D, the effect of vitamin D supplement on the score and quality of sleep in 20 to 50-year-old people with sleep disorders compared with control group. Now, I fall in that group of 20 to 50. I'm not sure if I have actually what could be diagnosed as a sleep disorder, but there are many nights where I am essentially an insomniac. So basically, they took this study and they took a group of almost, well, it was 89 subjects to be exact. Half of them received a vitamin D supplement. The other half received a placebo. And what they found was that the group that took the vitamin D supplement, here's the exact conclusion from the study. This study shows that the use of vitamin D supplement improves sleep quality, reduces sleep latency, raises sleep duration, and improves subjective sleep quality in people 20 to 50 years old with sleep disorders. Now, I didn't even realize this when this was brought to my desk. I can actually completely confirm this study. I just started taking our own winter sun just about a week or two ago when the cold weather and the overcast days were here hitting Austin, Texas. So I started to, now I'm taking winter sun every morning. I didn't even think about that. And now I'm actually literally sleeping better every night. And just like the study says, I fall asleep easier and then I stay asleep easier. And I didn't even realize that there was a correlation with the vitamin D. Now I read the study and that's definitely the case. So, wow, that this is an incredible study. And now I know that vitamin D is actually helping me sleep better. That's incredible. So not only do we have the sleep aid knockout at InfoWarsStore.com that is highly effective for helping you get asleep and fall asleep, but now the studies have shown that winter sun vitamin D can also help you get consistent sleep. So not only is getting vitamin D in the winter key with winter sun vitamin D, which is on sale right now, it's also going to help you get better sleep. So I'm glad that I found that out. I was wondering why I've been able to get to sleep and stay asleep lately. I didn't even realize it was because of vitamin D. Wow, incredible stuff there. So that's what we do at InfoWarsStore.com. And winter sun is currently on sale, so take advantage of that special. Let's go back out to the phone lines. We've got Dave calling in from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
Oh, and how you doing?
Long-time I'm doing good.
InfoWars supporter, and I think you're really doing a great job growing as a reporter there.
Well, thank you. That means a lot.
So I'd like to touch base on a few things, and I'll make it quick because I know you got a lot to run through. First thing is the concealed carry permit bill. It just got pushed through the House, and now it needs to get pushed into the Senate. We all need to step up and call our local senators' offices and make sure that gets pushed through. I know it'll be a task with 52 Republicans in office. We're going to need 8 Democrat senators to step up and actually do it. But I think it's something that we can actually make happen if we really put pressure on them.
Yeah, and I saw the liberal media is freaking out about this. I think there's fair debates to be had. To be honest with you, though, concealed carry. Well, I'm not going to get into personal things, but I even think the notion of concealed carry just needs to be legislated out anyway. I mean, I believe that everyone has a Second Amendment right. Now, there are certain laws that we're passing to make sure we don't get guns in the hands of psychotic people. I think one thing we need to do is if you're on SSRI drugs, you forfeit your right to a weapon, but maybe that's unconstitutional. These are all fair debates, but it'll be interesting to see if that goes through, but I wouldn't count on it with this Senate.
Yeah, I really, we need to step up and call it and put pressure on our senators. One thing I would love to see, you guys have the time, is a special report on, I was noticing 14 Republican congressmen voted no on that bill for being passed, and 7 Democrats voted yes. I'd love to be able to see this bill and others, what Republican congressmen are voting no for bills that are conservative policies, and what Democrat congressmen are voting yes.
Yeah, wouldn't you like to know the 58 Democrats that voted to impeach Trump, too? I bet we could guess them.
Absolutely. I mean, it'd be easy to guess them.
But Pelosi, Waters, Green, Schiff, Warren. Sorry, go ahead.
I was saying, what Democrats are actually voting yes on this? Because what that would do is, if we actually step up and you know, the majority of InfoWars supporters, obviously, we're going 100% on conservative policies. But if we take a look at what Democratic, you know, congressmen, senators, they're actually supporting our conservative policies to make sure that America stays patriotic instead of our Constitution getting sold out, that'll put even more pressure on the rest of the liberal politicians out there, because we're going to be standing behind.
I think I see what you're saying, because in one aspect I disagree with you. I don't think it's that significant, because Republicans or conservatives will still never support a Democrat. However, I do think there's a kind of an angle where you come out and you show support, or you even praise these Democrats for this vote, and then that kind of rubs the rest of the Democrats' nose in the dirt because they get jealous that exactly. these Democrats are getting positive attention when they just get nothing but negative attention for their anti-American stances. There's an interesting ripple to that. Thanks for the call, Dave. Let's go to Josh calling in from Texas, also wants to talk about gun laws. Go ahead, Josh.
Yes, I was wanting to talk about that bill. It's been renamed House Resolution 645.
Okay, go ahead.
And it combines the House Resolution Bill 38, which is the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act, but also combines the Fix the NICS system, which is the H.R. 4477, which a lot of the gun channels on YouTube has been saying that is more gun control on taking rights of citizens away from the people who are either have some disabilities or different things like that.
Well, I think that there's fair debates to be had over gun laws and gun legislation, and we can and should be having those discussions. But we always have to remember the slippery slope and why the Second Amendment was created and why we have it. And we just have to recognize that every time you do take away or chip away that unalienable right, you are going farther down the slippery slope. So we'll have to see and analyze this stuff when or if it gets passed. Thank you so much for the call, Josh. Let's take one more call this segment. Let's go to John calling in from Tennessee. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I was calling in on the war on Trump. And what I used to tell people during the election is, which one would you find to be lesser of the two evils, big government or big business? Which was one of the main reasons of why I like Trump over everybody else, period. But not only that, but he has pay cuts. I mean, he's taking a pay cut. He can't be bought. He could have already retired, run off into the sunset. But he didn't. He has no political strings attached. The only strings attached to he has are to the people. But think about what everybody hates. Everybody hates deep state.
Well, I'll go back to, look, I think the options were pretty obvious as far as the presidential election was concerned. To me, it was clearly Trump, no doubt. If you couldn't tell that by his message, just the reaction from the enemy media would tell you. But I had three questions that basically I would ask people that they would kind of contort themselves to answer. Is the government corrupt? Yes. Which candidate comes from the government? Hillary Clinton. Who are you voting for? Ooh, I guess I'd have to vote for Trump, wouldn't I? All right, final segment of the room, War Room. It is News Blitz time. Right now in California, the fires are continuing to spread. This is serious stuff. And I don't want to say, I don't want to say this is God's wrath. However, this is of biblical proportions. And of all of the stuff that's going on in California, would you really be shocked if it was God's wrath? Now, I didn't want to say that because we saw what the liberals said about Houston and how that was God's wrath to try to kill Trump supporters. So I'm not trying to politicize this or say that, but you have to admit, with everything we've seen coming out of California, the closest thing to Sodom and Gomorrah on the face of the earth, probably, it just really makes you wonder when you see these scenes. They look biblical. It literally looks like hell on earth. And of all of the trash that's come out of Hollywood and the California government, the Kate Steinle case, I'm just saying. All right, let's get into the news blitz here. LinkedIn report shows a 26% rise in November hiring. And then the follow-up, U.S. weekly jobless claims total 236,000 versus 240,000 expected. So that is the economy continuing to boom and people continuing to get jobs under President Trump's administration. You know, this is the nuance that sometimes Trump's administration is missing, where they have a photo of Andrew Jackson up during a Code Talker event. But maybe they're starting to get wise to these nuancey things. Melania Trump visits Texas aid workers And then she goes to the Whataburger in Corpus Christi that was the first Whataburger ever. And I was actually surprised, but people are really fired up about that. So that's just a little nuanceical thing that Melania had a good idea about. But she's so evil. According to the Washington Post, Melania Trump tweets, then quickly deletes wrong Pearl Harbor date. And they wrote an entire story on that. Please, people make mistakes on tweets. You can't edit them and they have to delete it and put the right thing out. But it's funny because the Washington Post never covers all of the tweets about liberals calling for violence or killing people that they delete or, you know, talking about molesting children, stuff like that, that falls under their radar. North Korea says U.S. threats make war unavoidable as China urges calm. Now, I'm not sure if this is real about... Let me just put this headline with a different spin, if you will. North Korea says U.S. threats make North Korea's future very bleak. I think that that would be a different kind of spin on that, but I don't know. Team USA doc Larry Nassar gets 60 years in prison in child porn case. You also had the U.S. Olympic gymnasts say that their coach was inappropriately touching them. But this is a totally different deal. We keep seeing all of, we've got mayors, you've got Democrat operatives getting arrested with all of these child pornography files on their computer. I'm just wondering, I'm hoping there's an investigation on where these are coming from. You had de Blasio's assistant get caught with a bunch of porn on his computer. This guy's convicted of having more than 37,000 child porn images in his possession. Where are these images coming from? That's what we need to find out. I mean, that is, I don't even want to think about that, but I just hope that who's ever putting this stuff out there is in the crosshairs of justice. Climate alarmist caught faking sea level rise. What? The man-made global warming people caught rigging the science again? That's right. The same people that have baseless scientific claims with formulas that they cannot prove to say that global warming or climate change is man-made don't even accept the very science that lies in their pants. But man-made global warming is failing, and I'm ticked off because now I have to leave the studio in Austin, Texas and deal with snow. So please buy some more Hummers, drive your car, you know, spray the aerosols in the sky. I don't want any snow in Austin. Bring me the global warming police. Swedish chief prosecutor, no-go zone in Rinkeby is like a war zone. So multiculturalism continues to fail Sweden, and the places where the Muslims have taken over are now no-go war zones. And if a white Swedish female walks through there, she is very likely to be molested and raped and maybe even murdered. And it's so loving. Russia banned from Winter Olympics by IOC. I couldn't even believe this. Russia has actually been banned from the Olympics in South Korea. Wow. Okay. Apparently they're all doping, or maybe it's a political move. I don't know. Regardless, that's the case. Then you've got, this is actually kind of a heartwarming story. Nigerian bobsledders are Africa's first ever Winter Olympic sports team. And they're doing a bunch of media events and interviews. I think this is cool. This is what the Olympics is all about. Bringing people together, giving people hopes and dreams, and inspiring others. I thought that that was a cool story, the Nigerian bobsled team. First ever Winter Olympic team coming from Africa. That's cool stuff. However, Nikki Haley has been seen on TV suggesting that the U.S. athletes skip the 2018 Olympics. I mean, I guess that tyrant up there in North Korea is threatening the Olympics, perhaps. Google sends powerful migrant crisis video published by Polish government to YouTube jail. So now... we know that they want to censor President Trump on Twitter. Now they are censoring the Polish government on YouTube for putting out reports on what's happening with the migrant crisis in Europe on YouTube. That just gets censored. What's that now? So here's the actual video that the Polish government put out that was erased from YouTube. Yeah, I mean, how dare you talk about what's actually happening with multiculturalism and open borders in Europe that's destroyed Sweden, destroyed London, destroyed Germany. You can't even have Christmas anymore in France because you're going to get killed by a Muslim. So that's all great. Poland wants to report on that. YouTube says, nope, can't do it. Way to go, YouTube. Such a bastion of free speech and truth. Pathetic. Okay, this is a teachable moment. Former South Carolina officer who killed Walter Scott sentenced to 20 years in prison. Now, I ask you, how many people listening to this show right now ever heard of Walter Scott? In fact, I'll take a quick poll. How many people on the InfoWars crew have ever heard of Walter Scott? Bueller? Anyone? Bueller? No one. Anyone? No one. Okay, so who is Walter Scott? Walter Scott is a black man that was killed, shot to death by a South Carolina police officer, Michael Slegger. Now, this is on video. He was running away. Officer shoots him in the back and kills him after a scuffle. Now, granted, Walter Scott was resisting arrest and fighting the police officer. However, I still don't believe that he deserved to die. And the officer, after the event, said the same thing. Now, he's been sentenced to 20 years in prison for killing that unarmed black man. But wait a second. Where's CNN? Where's MSNBC? Where's Black Lives Matter? Where are the riots, the marches, anything? Oh, there are none. Do you know why? Because this case is not ambiguous. This is a cut and dry case. So CNN doesn't want to touch it. MSNBC doesn't want to touch it. There's no crews on the ground in South Carolina. There's no marches in South Carolina for Walter Scott. Do you know why? Because it was not ambiguous. It was cut and dry, and they chose not to use this to create riots and a racial tense atmosphere. So this right here explains everything. It's not about race. It's not about black people. It's all about creating an environment where black people hate the police, black people think white people hate them and are holding them back because they totally ignored this story. So they'll cover Mike Brown, an ambiguous case with a bunch of lies and misinformation. They'll cover Trayvon Martin, another ambiguous case with a lot of different pontification that can be debated. But the open and shut and dry case of Walter Scott gets zero coverage, zero reporters on the ground, zero crew on the ground, nothing from Black Lives Matter, because it doesn't fit their agenda to divide and conquer America. Oh, by the way, so Kay Steinle's murderer gets to walk free, but a vandal who left bacon inside a mosque gets 15 years in prison. So a man leaves bacon in a mosque, and he also smashed windows and lights, so he does belong in prison, but he gets more time than an actual murderer, and yes, they cited him leaving bacon in the mosque as part of the crime. So now it's a bigger crime to put bacon in a mosque than actually kill someone. That's what you get in California. Now a student's been suspended for debating Islamic extremism with Muslim peer in debate club. That's right. You're not allowed to have a debate in higher education. You're not allowed to discuss Islamic extremism. You're not even allowed to talk about it if you're the Polish government and put a video on YouTube. You will be silenced. Pope wants to change the Lord's Prayer as it implies God induces temptation. I'm sorry, has the Pope ever read the Bible? God induces temptations? What about 40 days in the desert? I mean, who is this Pope? This is a nun Pope. This is a fake Pope. The Lord induces temptation. Duh.